I want to thank all of you for the role that you serve in enacting our Constitution and this democracy. So, thank you. Border wall. Look, they will jail the man with a jug of water who travels by foot into the desert on a Saturday morning. Lock up children, separate them from their parents, take away their medicine, abandon them to monsters, leave them to sleep on a concrete floor. Cruelty grows immense because we did not believe it could. Because it was a prison and not a school. Because it was a wall and not a table. Because the soccer fields had been cleared to make space for jails, because no one was responsible, because everyone was responsible, because the wall was higher than we ever imagined possible, because the law could not be held accountable. Because language had become indefensible. Because no one knew how to make it stop. And the second poem I want to read is inspired by my work as poet laureate. It's been really an honor to respond to calls from people in the community who request a poet and would like a poet to come visit or teach a workshop in our community or write a poem. I participated in an event at Ithaca College for Martin Luther King Day last January, and another highlight was being invited to teach in the county jail, and I taught 4 workshops there. And that was something I've never done before, and it was an extremely moving event, thing to do, something I'd love to do more of. But I wrote this poem when my heart was full with that, and with just all the surprising ways that poetry is serving in this community and the places we get to go as poet laureate. And it's still a work in progress, but I just wanted to share the feeling of it, so I'll read it.
Melissa, before you start, it's actually best if you back away a little bit.
Okay.
Okay.
I heard it going in and out.
Right.
I apologize. I didn't. It's hard to understand.
Sort of 6 inches away is kind of.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Praise song for poetry. Praise the path that poetry makes from the paper-choked desk or prison cell to the legislative chambers, from the choir mouthing an ancient hymn to the bookstore with clumsy chairs. Here's to children, to all that is taken up by osmosis in those shiny, still unbroken leaves. Here's to the wind nodding and spitting with mouth and tongue, guttural howls tried on thin air. Here's to the elders who priest us, and kids who witch us. Strange countries we would have feared had we not heard the singing. Walls we did not realize were in the way. Here's to whoever is standing alone on a stage, stammering, or in a holding cell, or at a kitchen table late at night when all but one is asleep. To the cord that connects, the energy that unites, the way we lumbering animals take heart and heart and heart again in what moves us to the edge of ourselves. Summoned by the litany of someone else's sorrow. hears to listeners everywhere under that bulb still burning, halo widening the corners of what looks like but is not our deepest isolation. And that's for the poets at the Ithaca County Jail. And thank you.
Thank you so much, Melissa Tucker. Melissa Tucky, our 2019 Poet Laureate. Thank you again, Melissa. We're delighted to have you. Come anytime. And tonight I'd also like to call up Kate Shanks Booth and Bridget Nugent, our Department of Youth Services Director and Deputy. I have a proclamation and would be delighted to read it for you. And thank you for bringing it to us. Whereas bullying has been identified as a prevalent and serious problem affecting today's youth, and whereas 19% of high school students nationally and 21.7% of New York State high school students are bullied at school, and whereas types of youth bullying include physical, verbal, and relational bullying, as well as cyberbullying that involves threatening or harassing electronic communications, and whereas bullying has psychological, physical, and academic effects and adversely affects youth who are bullied as well as those who engage in bullying, and whereas more than two dozen government agencies, community organizations, parents, and representatives from the county's six school districts formed the Tompkins County Bullying Prevention Task Force in March 2019, and whereas the task force's mission is to facilitate comprehensive cooperation across the community in developing and promoting appropriate bullying prevention and response strategies in Tompkins County, and whereas every member of the Tompkins County community, government agencies, community organizations, school administrators, teachers, athletic coaches, parents, and students can play a part in creating a bully-free environment in our schools, athletic fields, public spaces, and online websites. Now, therefore, I, Martha Robertson, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim October 7, 2019, as Bullying Prevention Day in Tompkins County. Like to say a few words. Happy to have either of you.
Hello. Thank you so much for this, Martha. We're really excited to be a part of the Tompkins County Bullying Prevention Task Force. And to celebrate the 7th, there will be a march that will be happening. GIAC, in partnership with some of our rural youth services, will be marching to the Commons, to the Pavilion at 4:30. We're going to be having some poetry and some other things to talk about bullying and just awareness. And it's blue. We're wearing blue. So on the 7th, if you'd like to wear blue and join us, that would be great. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your work. Great to have you here. Thanks. All right. I only have one reordering item. I think I will take the consent agenda before we go into any of the substantive resolutions. We'll probably do that relatively early in the meeting so that we can – I know there's some audience members who are looking for consent agenda items. We'll try to accommodate you. I just have one person here signed up. If anybody from the public would like to speak during public privilege, the blue sheets are in the back there. For speaking on the privilege of the floor, when you sign this, you do the following. I agree to a three-minute time limit. I agree not to raise my voice. I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of the peace. I agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. I agree that if I cause a disruption and am asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. Paul Rossi is welcome to the microphone. Hi, Paul. How are you?
I would like to beg your privilege to mention a few people in the county who are not elected officials in a positive manner. We had a meeting this morning in Watkins Glen for new realtors as well as realtors who are trying to gain some leadership opportunities. And we were lucky to have Megan McDonald from your planning department, who's been an incredible partner, as so many of you have been. Jason, before he even bought a house here, came and met with us. Martha, you've been outstanding, and I just wanted to thank you all again for the partnership you've had with your local board of realtors as we try to continue bringing people into this county, keeping them here in this county. And again, just one more reason that you stand out amongst the 17 counties I cover. And I just can't keep going without saying that you should be very proud of yourselves, and everyone in this county needs to know how wonderful it is to have a body such as yours to work with for people like me who schlock along in their car every day around the Finger Lakes. So thank you again to all of you, and keep up the good work.
Thank you so much, Paul. Appreciate that. Would anybody else like to address the legislature? All right, then I believe I see, is George here? Hi, George. George McGonigal, City Council. Welcome.
Thank you. As you probably know, we're getting ready to work on our city budget. Tomorrow night at Common Council, the mayor will present his budget to council. Our Department of Public Works are still working on streets, and they'll continue to do that as long as they can get asphalt, which will probably shut down fairly soon. The big item on Common Council's agenda this month, besides the budget, is the possibility of rezoning three blocks of West State Street on the West End. And that would change it from a six-story maximum of 60 feet to a five-story maximum of 52 feet, and with a step back after three stories if the building proposed is a five-story building. And if it's a four-story building, there is no step back. So what this will hopefully do is make it a more in-scale neighborhood to what it is now, and will still provide a lot of opportunity for development and for more density, and will also provide the option of cheaper building, because you can do a four-story building with a wood frame, basically. So that's the idea. And I bet I got one question I know already.
Oh, no, I'll get all of them to you tomorrow.
Okay, good.
Thank you, George. Anything else?
That's all I've got.
All right, thank you very much. Questions or comments to George? Deborah.
I just wanted to say, George, you're looking very, very cool in those glasses.
Yeah, debonair, I was going to say.
We've also been working on the weather. And today was our first try, so.
I do have one question, though. You mentioned that you would be working on the streets as long as you could get asphalt. Is there an asphalt shortage?
No, but they shut down in the fall when it gets too cold.
Oh, okay.
Too much money to heat it.
Ah, all right. Got it. Thank you.
Anything else?
I didn't know that. Glenn told me. He just wouldn't say it out loud.
All right. Thank you so much for coming, George. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Legislators. Glenn Morey.
Thank you, Martha. I just want to let everybody know that today in Groton, it's Phil English Day. And I'd like to tell you a little bit about who Phil English is. Phil has been a lifetime resident of Groton and is the oldest member of the American Legion Carrington Fuller Post 800. He's been a member for over 70 years. Phil is 95 today and is one of the last World War II vets in our area. I believe he is the oldest at the Carrington Fuller Post. Phil served in the Army since November 1943 to November 1945, with Patton's 3rd Army, 3rd Cavalry, and he was in the Battle of the Bulge. The village of Groton wishes to honor Phil for his service in his country, in his community. Christopher Neville named today, to proclaim Tuesday, October 1st, 2019, as Phil English Day. So I wish Phil a very happy birthday and make sure that he has many, many, many more. So.
Thank you, Glenn. Anyone else? Dan Klein, then Rich, then Annie.
Thank you. I'm the legislative liaison to the County Office of the Aging's Advisory Board this year, and I haven't really reported anything, so I just thought I'd mention a few things that I heard recently in an upcoming meeting that would be good to spread the word about. You know, one of the things the Office of the Aging does is to alert seniors about scams that are going on, and they handed out this sheet of two scams, and I just thought I would announce it just so people are aware of them. One is about medical braces, like back and leg braces. People receive them in the mail and then later get billed for them when they've requested them in the first place. So if you or someone you know receives unasked for medical braces in the mail, you should contact law enforcement. And then another scam has to do with either at events like health fairs or sometimes on the phone, people offer free genetic testing, or they call it free genetic testing, like a 23andMe kind of thing. And later on, at some point, they ask you for your Medicare number, and that's the scam. So those are the kinds of things to keep in mind, and I'm glad that our Office of the Aging is alerting people about this. And the last thing I wanted to mention is that there is a public hearing for the Office for the Aging. So this is an opportunity to tell the public about the things that the office does and also to hear feedback from residents about issues for aging people that they would like the county to know about. So there's two of these meetings coming up. One is on Tuesday, October 22nd, 10 o'clock at the Brookendale Community Center. And then the other one is the following Tuesday, October 29th, 4:30 at Lifelong. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. I've gotten enough phone calls to make me really annoyed, and they sound like they're from Social Security or they're from Medicare. And I just agree with that, and people should just not answer any of those. Just hang up. So thank you very, very much for bringing that to our attention.
Thank you.
Rich and then Annie.
Thank you, Martha. I would like to answer George. It does seem like the city has done a tremendous amount of work on their roads and streets this year. Certainly lots more to do, but it's starting to show, which is a really, really good thing. There is more to do, but I've seen a lot of patching, and it's going in the right direction, I hope. But what I really wanted to just mention is the season and what's been happening with trails. In the springtime, the town of Dryden opened up a section of trail in between the village of Dryden and village of Freeville that is really beautiful. And I know that they're working on a connection in the direction of the town of Ithaca trail. And certainly the town of Ithaca and town of Dryden have been leaders in building trails. And the payoff from it is this is a wonderful community resource that we're seeing getting developed year by year, and it's been done with some careful planning, and it's starting to really bear fruit. I'd also mention that we're lucky to have New York State doing work on trails, and if anybody has been down to Treeman Marina at the end of the season, they have just finished work of building a trail system around on the south end of Cuga Lake that is gorgeous, and it connects to the trail that the city has in place through Cass Park. It adds a significant amount of new lake access, and I think I used the word beautiful, and it really is. There's picnic facilities there. If you have a chance before the weather turns on us to just take a walk down there or ride your bike, it is very impressive what they've done. So thank you.
Thank you, Rich. I got a call from Fred Bond from Finger Lakes State Parks today. There's going to be a celebration, a ribbon cutting, whatever they do, next Thursday at around 2 or 2:30. Everybody will get an invitation to that. So so try to put that on your calendars. Great. Annie?
Thank you, Martha. I just want to say a couple of comments since it's Bullying Prevention Day, and I'm glad that we're proclaiming that today. That just from a personal experience, I was bullied. I didn't really realize how many different times in my life till I started writing it down here. From when I was a young kid, my brother standing out at the bus stop at the end of our driveway, he would trick me or bully me into giving him my lunch money. So I would go to
siblings. I'm not counting any.
So I would hide at school at lunchtime because I didn't have any money for lunch. And then I had kids in the neighborhood that would beat kids in our family up. And I didn't tell anybody about this. So what I'm encouraging kids to do is to tell somebody. And I'm not sure of myriad of reasons why I didn't tell somebody. There was also a lot of stuff going on in my family's house. But I was bullied and beat up by kids in the neighborhood. Halloween, kids would steal our candy and knock us around a little bit. And we'd go home and say we fell, and that's how we got a split lip. In college, I had bullying. So anyway, I never went to any authorities, and I just want to encourage kids or adults to tell somebody, because people do want to help you, and it's very hard to do it alone. So please ask for help. Thank you.
Thank you, Annie. Leslyn, and then Henry.
Following on what Annie is sharing and Kate was sharing also, Monday as the designated Bullying Prevention Day. And I'm very proud that the staff, particularly our Deputy Director at GIAC, working in conjunction with a number of other agencies, we are organizing the rally on the Commons. And that said, I'm just repeating it so that folks who might have tuned in will hear, we're inviting everyone to come. Either come by GIAC 415 and march with us down to the Commons or meet us at the Bernie Milton Pavilion where we will stand up against bullying. We're blue. Blue is the designated color for anti-bullying. So Dave, I'll borrow a shirt later on. It's a nice blue. But certainly it's something that we're trying to bring awareness more awareness too. So it's great to have our young people involved in helping to organize this rally. So please do stop by. It's from 4:30. I know we have a meeting to 5:45, Bernie Milton Pavilion on the Commons, marching from GIAC to the pavilion and then having a short rally. So everyone is invited. I also want to remind you all, I know when Lee Dillon, the folks from TCA, was here, they had offered or given us an invitation to come to the opening dedication of Amici House. And Harriet Grinnell Child Care Facility. So please, that is on October 18th. 5:30 in the afternoon, and we hope that you all can make it at Wright TCA there on Spencer Road. It's right there. Absolutely beautiful facility. It's interesting. I was appointed as the liaison from this body to the board of TCA, but they don't have liaison appointments. So, so this is my pseudo liaison report on what's happening. So please, if you can, attend. It really is a fantastic, fantastic facility. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslyn. Henry, then Amanda.
Yes, you do have to RSVP by Monday. Glenn is just sliding things and whispering things because they're trying to get a count of all, you know, how many will be there to make sure we have enough refreshments and all that other good stuff. So please do RSVP by Monday, October 7th. Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie.
Good.
I just wish to announce that the Tompkins County Office of Human Rights and CNY Fair Housing are having some events on Thursday. They have a training for service providers October 3rd from 1 to 3 in the conference room at the Tompkins County Mental Health Building. I believe that's on the 6th floor. And they're also having a annual public meeting, which conflicts with our budget meeting, but it's at 6 o'clock at 6 to 8 at GIEC. And it's a public meeting, tenants' rights, and the recent changes in the New York system human rights law. So there's that. Also, I got an invitation from CAUSE, Cougar Addiction Recovery Services, is pleased to announce the grand opening of the opioid treatment program at the Ithaca Outpatient Center on late October 29th. The time is 2 to 4. It's October 16th. And finally, I wish to say it's homecoming weekend for Cornell University. And so there's a fireworks and show on Friday night and a football game on Saturday at 3 o'clock versus Georgetown. So go Big Red.
Thanks, Henry. Amanda.
I just wanted to let everyone know that my favorite time of year is coming up. On October 12th, the Tompkins County Public Library book sale will be starting. Books start at $4.50 on that Saturday, and then the prices go down. It's Saturday, Sunday, Monday for 3 weekends in a row. So, and all the proceeds go to the public library. So everyone go, buy books.
All right, anybody else? Anna.
I would just add to that, I concur with Amanda that it is very fun, and I encourage anyone for once in their life to do the Saturday morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, get in line. And I know that sounds crazy, but there's a whole bunch of crazies that do it, including my sisters and I. And everybody shares coffee, and there's people that have been tenting out since the night before, and it's kind of hysterical. And everybody ends up at Ithaca Bakery at 6 in the morning to warm up again before you get first in line to get the best kids' books, because by the time 8 o'clock rolls around, they're all gone. So just FYI.
Some of us are trying to get rid of our books. Drop them off every weekend.
I did say kids' books. Those are just,
got those too.
They hold a special place in our heart.
Thank you. Before I go back to Annie, I want to thank Amanda for bringing Melissa Tuckey here. Thanks for arranging that so that we would hear from her tonight. Thanks. Annie Corman.
One event coming up is the a GIEC fundraiser, which is on October 12th. It starts at 5 o'clock at the Ithaca Eagles Club. And so it's part of the capital campaign, I believe, at GIEC for their new gymnasium gym renovations. And tickets are $30, but it's good for 2 spaghetti dinners and 2 adult beverages and an entry into the 200 Club drawings, which I guess you can win some money. And there's also music and dancing with DJ Duchess. And the spaghetti dinner it can be meat. It is vegetarian. And Leslyn also told me it's also you can get gluten-free, which I had a couple of questions about.
I'll take your other ticket then, Anne.
What's the date and time again?
That's October 12th. The doors open at 5, and I wonder if anybody here has tickets. Leslyn might have some tickets, I believe. So, thank you. And I'll be going, so you can hang out with me if you're so inclined.
Okay, so nobody gets to be bored in Tompkins County. I would just point out that since...
What? I said, so books lined up.
That's right.
Buying books and then coming over my spaghetti and dancing.
Since we were last together, my brother and sister-in-law were here, and we did Porch Fest, and then the next weekend we did the Apple Fest, and I told my brother that it's always like this in Tompkins County, and actually it was true. So just 2 other quick things on my report. Are there any other legislators to got things to announce. Okay, just two other quick things. You all have an email from Heather Buck for direct report evaluations for... I know I'm bringing the mood down. I know, sorry. But, you know, I just want to remind you that by October 11th, please fill out surveys for two of our direct reports, Rick Snyder and Jason Molino, this year. So that's in your inbox from Heather Buck. And just after we met last time, Cornell made its announcement out in the town of Dryden at a home on Crystal Drive. There's an INHS community housing trust home. Cornell's announcement was that it is adding to its annual contribution for the Community Housing Development Fund, adding $100,000 a year for the next 2 years, and in addition committing to the following six-year MOU of the three-way partnership that we have. So there's been good media coverage. Thanks for Marcia's work in helping us get coverage on that. So I just want to make sure everybody knew that has been pledged, and we're really excited and pleased to have that partnership. So questions, anything else from folks? All right, let me go through the consent agenda, then we'll go to the staff reports. Please let me know if you have anything to pull off. Resolution A, authorizing an intermunicipal agreement between Tompkins County and Cortland County Public Transportation Service, ID 8900. Resolution B, Fall 2019 Community Celebration Grant Awards, ID 8895. Resolution C, authorization to create additional district attorney titles, ID 8816. Resolution D, authorization to execute supplemental funding agreement with New York State Department of Transportation, PIN 3756.18, Ludlowville Road, County Road 159, Bridge Reconstruction in the Town of Lansing, ID 8898. Resolution E, making a negative declaration of environmental significance in relation to resolution number blank of 2019, authorization to submit an application to the New York State Office of Parks, Recreation, and Historic Preservation for the rerouting of a portion of Tompkins County Snowmobile Trail, ID 8858. Resolution F, authorization to submit application to the New York State Office of Parks, Recreation, and Historic Preservation for the rerouting of a portion of Tompkins County Snowmobile Trail, ID 8859. Resolution G, scheduling a public hearing for the amendment of the Tompkins County Comprehensive Plan, ID 8890. Resolution H, resolution to enable Tompkins Cortland Community College to offer a Medicare supplemental policy to its retirees over age 65, ID 8871. And Resolution I, scheduling a public hearing on the 2020 Tompkins County budget and the 2024 Tompkins County Capital Program, ID 8869. Is there a motion for the consent agenda? Moved by Leslin, seconded by Deborah. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. And there are no appointments. All right, let's go to County Administrator Report. Jason Molino.
Thank you, Martha. I have two things to report on. The County Shared Services Plan has been a little bit delayed, and I'm going to postpone finalizing a draft to the panel, then, which would then come back to the legislature for comment. You have the ability to comment on it, and then it would go back to the panel to vote on. Until we get through recent budget discussions, there's a position that may be considered that could be considered as a shared service opportunity, and if included in the budget, I would include it in the shared service plan. So I would expect after your voting meeting, assuming there aren't any changes, I'll put together the plan and then ship it out to the panel to okay to send to you to comment on at a later meeting, and then for them to adopt towards the end of October, early November. Outside of that, we've had two recent retirements of department heads that have been with us for some time. Julia Maddock, about a week and a half ago, announced her retirement. She's the executive director for the Workforce Development Board. She is set to retire March 27th. And then also Pat Bouchel, our longtime director of probation and community services, is set to retire at the end of January. And I've met recently, just today, with the executive committee for the Workforce Development Board to begin the process of briefly reviewing the job description and then beginning to get folks together to start the interview process, hopefully posting it around early November.
And then the Director of Probation and Community Services, it will be an internal, most likely an internal promotion, as there's a competitive civil service list, a certified civil service list that we'll pick from. We'll probably start those interviews sometime late this month or early into next month, into November. At the same time, also communicated to the Human Rights Commission to begin the process for advertising and posting the Director of Human Rights position, and we'll start interviewing for that sometime this fall as well. So a little bit of work ahead of us on the hiring side, but continue to move forward.
Thank you, Jason. Questions, Henry?
And you're looking for how many other, what other positions are you looking for, heads of departments?
The Department of Emergency Response position will come up. We'll probably post and advertise that towards the late winter, early spring. Then also the Human Resources Commissioner position will post sometime in the next several months.
Anything else?
How about Human Services Coalition?
Human Service Coalition is not our appointment.
Oh, okay.
I know they've gone through a hiring process. They're also going through a renewed search after the first process to not produce candidates they want to appoint.
All right. Thank you, Jason. Jonathan Wood, County Attorney.
I've been wanting to update, and will try to update you on the opioid litigation. I'm a little hesitant to do it because I'm afraid people will ask questions, and the answer to every question is I don't know.
I'm sorry. Somebody coughed, and I didn't hear what you were going to update us on.
Oh, the opioid litigation.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
So there are a couple things that have happened in the past month or so, and I'm not sure if they've clarified things or made things more confusing, which were already confusing. One is that there has been a settlement with attorney generals from 22 states and four territories with Purdue Pharma, which is the big producer. Well, it's the producer of Oxycontin, so it's really the big company in this, although there are many companies. As a result of that settlement, the company has declared bankruptcy. One of the things about them declaring bankruptcy is that basically cuts off all claims against them in all other forums. So under this arrangement, which has to be approved by the bankruptcy court, basically Purdue, the company, and this family, the Sackler family, would contribute money based on formulas, and the amount of money is based on estimates is widely different from $5 billion to $15 billion. It's really impossible to tell what it is. And that money would then be distributed to creditors. And it sounds like a lot of money, but if the creditors includes every municipality in the country, it's not sure what effect that would have on Tompkins County and what we would get. It's also opposed by many states, including New York State. So it's unclear whether that would happen, and it's also unclear what the effect would be if it did happen. But it's certainly an important development in that they are the major player. They are now out of the other litigations, at least for now, because they've declared bankruptcy. And the bankruptcy court will have to determine whether what to do about their bankruptcy, how much money they would have to put in, how much money the family would have to put in order to be released. And so, you know, I expect it to take certainly more than a year, so we won't know what would become of that. The second major thing is that there is what is going on called the MDL, the multi-district litigation, which is basically municipalities from all over the nation suing these drug companies in court, and the major court being in Ohio. And in this proceeding, the judge has established a class action for the purpose of negotiating settlement. The class would include basically every municipality in the country, including Tompkins County. And now we've gotten all this paperwork and need, I think we have to November 2 or some to decide whether we want to be part of that class or not. We have our attorneys who, as you know, we hired to represent us. they will intend to make some kind of recommendation. They're still reviewing it and deciding what that recommendation will be. So, like I said, a lot of it has happened, but it's very unclear how any of it will affect the county, how it will affect what we will get ultimately. I mean, it certainly seems like things are moving towards settlement of many of the claims against at least some of the companies, but what that will mean in terms of what the county will get, I don't know. And I hope that, I mean, it's an update. I'm not sure if it's helpful or not. So, and like I said, you know, I'd be happy to answer questions, but most of them are going to be, I don't know, because that's pretty much what I know. No one really knows, I think, what will be the result of all these things. So that's my report.
So even though we know the answer, any questions? Deborah.
Well, I thought Jonathan might know the answer to this. Is part of the basis for the state's opposition to the Purdue settlement the fact that there's evidence that the Sacklers had offshored money and then were not very forthcoming about that?
Now, the New York State Attorney General has said that. They have discovered $1 million that they believe that this, that the Sackler family, I mean, these people talk big numbers.
You just have Austin Powers.
That they have hidden by transferring it from the company to themselves. But the truth is, the real opposition comes, and including New York, is they simply think that it's not enough. The number isn't enough. And whether that is because they are hiding money, or whether it's because they just think it's not enough, whether they're hiding it or not, the basic opposition is really simply that it's not enough money.
Mike Lane.
I just wanted to say, John, for that complicated discussion, it reminds me of why we call our community the most enlightened in the country. So I appreciate that.
Dan?
Who does? Jonathan, we joined one of the lawsuits. Was that the second one you described?
It is part of the second one I described.
Part,
yes.
The second one.
We are not part of the attorney general suits. That only involves states.
Okay.
And it's also unclear what the states intended in terms of municipalities. There are 22 states that may each have had something totally different in mind, but there's nothing about, you know, how that the claims by the states would affect municipalities.
Thank you.
So are we... We're part of the Purdue Pharma case?
Well, the Purdue Pharma case is they have declared bankruptcy, and once you declare bankruptcy, that affects every case. So they are a defendant in our case, but it puts a stay on all claims against them in every case. So in other words, the claims that we have against them are stayed. I mean, we can't proceed to them until the bankruptcy matter is resolved. So, you know, in bankruptcy, any creditor is a, or anybody who has a claim is a member or has the opportunity to be part of that bankruptcy. But the important thing is that it puts a stay on any claims against them in the meantime, and that in the event the bankruptcy court approves a settlement, then we may get some part of that, but what part of that is completely unknown. And what that is also completely unknown.
All right. Anybody else? Thank you, Jonathan. Thanks for getting us into it. I think it was the right thing to do, whatever happens. So appreciate that. Rick Snyder, Finance Director.
Thank you. Boy, that was really complicated. Mine's simple. We made a lot more money in August. Page 6 of your agenda packet tonight shows the sales tax distribution for the month of August. In that midsection mark county, you can see that just for August alone, we were up 8.43% compared to last year. At the end of August, when you look at the year-to-date numbers, the distributions for the county totaled $24,902,292 compared to $23,671,690 in 2018. The increase, $1.2 million, $1,230,000. So year after year, we're up 5.2%. If you go to the bottom of the chart, you can see how we compare it to budget. Of course, two-thirds of the year through, we should be at 66.6%. And you can see that we're, our gross sales tax numbers are a little above that at 68.6%. The part that Jason uses to balance the budget, the general fund, that second section there shows that we're at 66.8%. So we're right at budget for 2019. August was, again, the best August that we have on record at this point in time. And it kind of compares to when I find out that we're at 5.2%, I have a treasurer's group meeting coming up soon where they'll be discussing this, but most reflect on the fact that year-over-year consumer spending is what's keeping this afloat. It's not so much the manufacturing anymore, but the consumer spending year-to-date is a little bit over 4% compared to last year. So we're at 5.2% nationwide. Consumer spending is up 4%. Questions?
Deborah?
Well, I read today that consumer spending patterns have changed drastically in that so many retail stores are shutting down, and more we're going to Internet shopping. Do these numbers include Internet sales tax?
I don't know that for a fact, but we were told 3 or 4 months ago that after June 1st, we would begin to receive the Internet sales tax. There's no breakdown. There's no evidence that I can show you that that is, in fact, what's contributing to some of this increase. But if the state holds true to what they've been telling us, at this point in time, from June 1st towards the end of the year, we should show an increase based on Internet sales. Yes.
Thank you.
Mike Lane.
I had pretty much the same question that Deborah had. And what I'm kind of wondering is when we can find out how much new sales tax there is with Internet sales. I think it's going to be a lot of money. And then find out how much has been stolen from us by requiring us to pay the AIM funding for the towns and villages. And I don't blame the towns and villages. That's nothing. They had nothing to do with it. It's the state legislature and the governor that gave it to us and took it away.
That was going to be my question. Good. All right. Thanks, Mike. Annie?
Thank you, Rick, for the report. So I also had a question about the AIM funding. Do we know yet whether we're going to have to pay that out of the sales tax that we receive, the Internet sales tax, directly, or is the state withholding that money and they're going to pay it? The AIM money.
I haven't gotten official direction from the state controller's office yet. I don't know if you've heard anything more recent. I thought maybe at NYSAC, with all the, and all the discussions, they would reveal something. Dave Lucas will be at my treasurer's group meeting in about 2 weeks. I'm hoping when he gives his sales tax update, he'll be the source to who, if anyone knows, he will know. And I think at this point in time, they're not releasing anything officially because they just don't know. They haven't really cemented down. Other than what Mike said, yes, you will see an increase in Internet sales, and you will see a decrease due to the AIM funding. And how that shakes out, I think I reported out once before, maybe it was in an email, that we're not expected as a county to do any additional work as far as distributing, you know, making that calculation. The state is going to be the ones that take the AIM funding from us and give it directly to the towns or villages affected by AIM funding. So it's not like we have to do that calculation, or that's part of our distribution process. We're going to be receiving the net of increased Internet sales, decreased AIM funding.
It all sounds really transparent, doesn't it? Deborah.
Do we happen to know, like last year, what the aggregate AIM funding was to municipalities in Tompkins County?
Yes.
We can get that. I don't have it off the top of my head, but it was part of the resolution that you passed. I want to say it's a little more than $500,000. And that's everybody, towns and villages, excluding the cities, because cities are impacted by this change. But I don't.
Not too bad.
Actually, it was a little bit less than $500,000. I can get the exact number, but I don't remember off the top of my head. Wait a minute. Between $300,000 and $500,000.
Anything else for Rick? Thank you.
Do you have a second report?
Or yeah.
This one's real short. I just received today, or it came in last week while I was gone, but I received from the State Comptroller's Office the results of the fiscal stress monitoring system for the year 2018. We again came in with the official score of 0%. 0% means you are at the lowest possible number on the fiscal stress monitoring system. Anything below a 45% is in the safe zone. And so this is one time I remember going home to tell my parents one time I got a 0 on a test. That was not a good thing. We got a 0 on a test this time, and it was a great thing. And so I received that report, and there's also what they call an environmental stress report, and it doesn't really have to do so much with the environment as far as trees or streams or anything like that. It's the environment that's non-dollars. Well, sometimes they're dollars, but they're more of the demographic type information, the median net income, the increase in your population, some of those statistical things that Moody's looks at. We did really well on that report also. I think it was around 13 or 16%, somewhere around there. And so those reports come as a result of us, A, getting our AUD, our annual update document to the state on time, and B, by having staff that are willing and able to put together a lot of the statistical sampling and a lot of the tables and things that we need to do to report to the state. And it doesn't remark on our abilities as a staff. I mean, this is information that's compiled. It's a result of the financial status of the county. And I think it's a good reflection on how well we govern, the choices that you make, the way that we budget, all things that legislators do and department heads do. And so it's not a measuring stick on how well my staff does, but it's a good indication of how well we govern and how well we mind our financial resources. So I thought I'd share that with you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the goose egg. That's great. Thank you. Anything else for Rick? All right. Very good. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? All right. Then we're ready to go to reports. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean, Claiborne Chair. We've already done the consent agenda, so we're going to reports, and WDIC is up first.
Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee met on the 25th of September. We spent a bit of time talking about the climate survey and what came out of that and what directions we're moving in. Some time discussing a little bit more about the chief equity and diversity position and the need for that. Having a little bit more conversation about what that position could, would, should be doing for our county. We also took time just to talk a little bit about child care and supporting employees and others and how we might look at that. We didn't come to any conclusion. It was just a topic that was put out there for our administration to explore a little further and what we can do about that. That was the bulk of our conversation on the 25th. Our next meeting will be, I can't remember the date. Whatever the fourth Wednesday is.
October 23rd.
Thank you. And October. And we also, just as a heads up, our, I don't know why I have October 28th. I know it's not right. Whatever, we also, as a heads up, just letting folks know that our November, December meetings always fall during the holidays. And so we try to have one meeting to cover both. And we've chosen December 9th as that date. So if anybody's interested, we'll have a lot to talk about at that point. That was it.
Thank you, Leslyn. I got Henry and then Annie.
And Leslyn, what did we do on Saturday?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Henry.
Oh, myself and Ann Corman and Leslyn. Leslyn also attended the, we tabled at the First People's Festival. Had lots of good questions from people and had a fun time talking with people.
Yeah. Yep. Representing the county. We did.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for doing that. Annie?
Thank you. I just wanted to also add that Amy Hendricks from administration at that point said that she was going to try and get do a short presentation for the legislature on the equity and diversity officer. I'm not sure when that was going to be.
I thought I heard that would be like at the budget meeting.
Yes, we'll have one person, at least one person from the diversity and inclusion and fusion team that put forward the recommendation. They'll be there to answer questions, but I suspect the rest of the team will be there.
Okay.
And they'll be here Thursday's EBC meeting.
Great, thank you.
Yeah. Leslyn.
Since this was something that our employees and that team, you know, is recommending to the legislature, we thought that it would be best if we sort of heard from them, the thinking behind it. So I want to thank Jason for and Amy for reaching out to that team to see if we want to get our employees involved in change government and so on changing government. And so it's exciting to know someone will be able to come and speak to their thought process behind it. So thank you. Sorry, I was chewing stuff.
All right. Thank you all three for that. Anything else for WDSC? All right. I'm remiss. I should have gone right to public safety and asked Rich to pick up resolution M for the community's sake. I've got packet page 42. Go ahead.
Certainly. Well, I would move a resolution in support of allowing deer and bear rifle hunting in Tompkins County.
Seconded by Deborah.
I would speak to this. This has been the product of several sessions at our Public Safety Committee meetings. We've been fortunate to have large public participation, both pro and con, on this issue. We also had several hunting safety instructors come and speak with us, as well as a representative of the DEC. So we've accumulated a lot of information, and I believe that's all been shared with the legislators. Certainly anything to do with guns is an emotional topic in some measure because of what's happened on the larger scale in our country. And so it was useful, I believe, to have a fair amount of education on this, and certainly to look at the safety issues related to hunting in our state. Most counties in the state do allow rifle hunting for deer and bear. In Tompkins County, rifles are allowed for other animals, but not deer and bear. So hunters are using rifles now, but for limited purposes. What this resolution would do would be to allow deer and bear hunting for the three-week season using rifles. Right now, a hunter can use a shotgun, a pistol, a bow and arrow, a crossbow, and I believe a muzzle-loading gun. The points that I felt were important, and I'll say I'm going to support the resolution, that the rate of incidents in New York State has really been brought down over a course of many years. It is a success story, what's happened with hunter safety. And to the point that the accidents that are happening tend to be not necessarily related to the weapon involved as well as just the handling of the weapon, say climbing down from a deer stand or climbing over a fence or getting the weapon in and out of a vehicle. Certainly accidents can happen, and we should be really careful with any weapon, including rifles. But the ability to hunt with a rifle, with a scope, and the clear view of the target seems to provide a cleaner shot in hunting, the downside being that a rifle bullet can go further than a slug out of a shotgun if they're aimed level. You know, obviously, if you're aiming it up at 45 degrees, any projectile can go a fair distance. But a rifle bullet can go further, and there's risk there. But I believe it's counterbalanced by the increased accuracy and the lack of real safety incidents involving the use of rifles. I'd also say that we have a significant issue in our county with deer, that we lead the state in nuisance permits and have because of the deer population that's here. We really should be doing things to control our deer population. Unfortunately, living in the city, we have deer all around our house, and obviously there can't be hunting there, but this would have some impact, I believe, on the deer population. So for all those reasons, I would support this resolution.
Thank you, Rich. I've got Anna, then Shauna, then Annie, then Amanda.
This is not necessarily the most controversial piece of legislation that we've passed, but it is by far one of the most, I would say, difficult for me personally. I will definitely go on record to say that I am anti-gun in general. I'm okay, NRA, thank you, it's official, please note. But this particular resolution is for a law that has to be read carefully because it is nuanced, and if you don't understand the nuance, you're going to misunderstand it. This is particularly a resolution to increase or not to increase, to allow for those who are hunting to use a rifle during the 3 weeks in which there is the bear and deer season. This is not a resolution in my research that is going to significantly increase the number of guns overall in our county. The research that I have been doing has shown that the actual number of hunters in the county has been on a steady decline. I think that that's really important. The other thing to note is it's difficult to gauge from the number of licenses that are issued because we often have cases where several members of a family might get licenses, but only one member of the family goes out to do the actual hunting for the family, and that is the meat that they eat. I'm a vegetarian, too, so this is a very strange position for me to be taking. So I just want to point that as well. The question has come up about accuracy. So that first one is number of guns. I do not think that this is going to increase the number of guns. Why I would say that is because a lot of the people who are already hunting already have rifles. They just use it the week before and the week after. They just don't use it during those 3 weeks because it is not allowed for those 3 weeks. They switch their gun out, they use their shotgun, and then that's the gun they use for those 3 weeks, and then they shift back to their rifle from the many hunters that I have spoken to and interviewed over the last couple months. The accuracy of the guns is an issue that has come up. All of the hunters that I've spoken to have said, hands down, the rifle is more accurate than the shotgun. Whether you are using bullets or slugs, because that is an argument, that is a difference that what people are talking about. It is true that a shotgun, you can use a scope. So that is misleading to some extent. However, in practice, very few people who use a shotgun use scopes on those shotguns. So in practice, as written, the rifle is most often used with a scope, which helps significantly increase its accuracy. Why is that important to me? That is important to me because the safety of humans is very important to me, but also the suffering of animals is really important to me. If I can't prevent animals from being shot, I certainly want them to suffer as little as possible. And again, all the research that I am doing shows that the accuracy of using a rifle significantly reduces the number of times animals are shot and the number of times that animals are shot and are not killed and then are unable to be pursued until death and that run around. So there have been story after story after story. Every single hunter I spoke to, and I've spoken to at least 15, have said cases in which they were up until with flashlights at night trying desperately to find an animal that did escape, that they didn't kill, because they were heartbroken. That was one story that was very difficult for me. Or being out and hunting and seeing animals, a deer missing a leg or a deer limping, deer wounded but not killed, that they found out. Thank you for humoring me sharing a lot of information here, but I have done a ridiculous amount of research. A couple more things, and then I will pass on the mic here, but I wanted to share everything that I did study. I sent all of you a map this afternoon, and that map covered municipalities and the trails and the parklands. Those are all places in which I think that rifles should not be used in right now. There's the law around shooting around municipal places or around buildings is 150 yards. You're not supposed to use a rifle. So I asked for 150 yards to be put to the left and the right of all the trails as well to see if there was a lot of space left over after all of those places had been marked off. My logic was, because I was looking for an argument to not support this resolution, I have to admit. That is humbly admitting. That was not a good argument. There was a significant amount of land that was left in the county after taking all of those into consideration. So the last thing that I will bring up, two things. One is mass shootings is often brought up whenever the word guns are brought up. Guns, therefore, means mass shootings. And although I deeply appreciate all the pain around people who've had personal experiences with homicides in their life, that have seen it and been traumatized by it, who are traumatized by the mass shootings, which we all absolutely are, this resolution isn't about that. That would be a different resolution. That would be a resolution about background checks. That would be a resolution about banning guns, period. That would be a ton of different ones. This is very specific and narrow in scope, and it is affecting the practice of hunters. If there is someone who is going to kill someone or has an intention of killing someone or has an intention of using a gun that is not allowed during a certain hunting season or an intention of using a gun outside of a hunting season, they are all intentionally going outside of the law, and this resolution and this law will do nothing to prevent that. So this is not about that. This is very specific narrow scopes about the guns that hunters who already hunt can use, most of them already having rifles. I'm going to just leave with the last thought, which is the safety of humans. That's in all the data. I think it's really important for us to look at all of the counties that already have rifles, and they have not had significant increases in the number of accidental deaths in comparison to counties that don't have them. So I'm looking at that evidence, and I think about the amount of suffering that happens to animals, and I'm choosing to support it because of what I think that it would protect for the animals with minimal risk. Thanks for your patience.
Okay, I got Shauna, Annie, and then Amanda, and Mike Lane.
Thank you. I just wanted to thank Rich for doing a really nice job in public safety of promoting us to have deep, deep conversation. And I actually did vote for this in committee so that all 14 of us can have this conversation and make this decision. I'd also like to thank all four constituents that I've spoken with that have concerns, either concerns or feel that we should vote forward this resolution. The one conversation that I actually actually had today that stuck in my mind was a homeowner that does have land that is a hunter, and this person owns both rifles and shotguns, and the one thing that this person said was that he does not allow rifle shooting on his property. And if we were to vote forward this resolution, he still would not want rifle shooting on his property, just because the bullet does go too far. Many times people will shoot outside of their range and not have a safe shot. He said that unfortunately there have been times where he thought he had the shot and he didn't, and he has no idea where the bullet ended. So that definitely weighs heavy in my decision. And then, of course, the thought that right now, in this day and age, I do believe that we need tighter gun control. And while we can say that this isn't about mass shootings, I don't want to be part of loosening the gun control laws in our local county. So I will not be voting for this. Or I will be voting no. Sorry.
Okay. Annie, Amanda, and then Mike Lane.
Thank you. So I also have been talking to a lot of people and researching this issue. So to expand the use of rifles for that three-week period for large game, for me, what it comes down to is there needs to be a really good, compelling reason why I would want to vote for that and why we would want to do that. And I have not come up with any reason. I've listened to my colleagues and I've listened to a lot of people in the community, and so some of the information that I read, for instance, or some of the things people have been saying is a rifle is more accurate. So I am definitely wanting to keep the people in this community safe. I am also an advocate that if you are going to kill an animal, I would want it to be killed as humanely as possible. The shotguns that we have nowadays, according to a lot of research that I've done and talked to people, has said that they are accurate within 100 to 200 yards, which is 300 to 600 feet. And you can, and at 100 feet, one of the quotes I found was that you can hit a clover at 300 feet with a shotgun slug. And so, to me, in this, looking at this county, a lot of the rural areas where hunting would be allowed, there's a lot of places where there's not 500 feet from houses, and there is a stand that was put up on our property, up in a tree stand, and that is not 500 feet from my house, but I guess that's allowable if the owner gave permission, but it's not 500 feet from at least two other houses. And when I looked up the distances that shotgun ammunition travels, it's measured in feet. Rifle ammunition is described in miles. And out in the country, as a lot of people know, there's a lot of different areas that we have country blocks, and they're often in 1 mile increments. So the fact that if everything was in alignment and the gun was angled in a certain way for a rifle, that shot could go a couple of miles is very concerning for me. And as Anna mentioned, there are scopes available for shotguns now, and maybe not everybody has one, but they are available to help them be more accurate. And so if we remained with just being able to use shotguns and bow and arrow, then people would have to be up close and personal with animals, and I would rather have that. I think it would be easier to locate the animal if they had been shot and injured, and to track them down if they were feet away versus, you know, possibly an eighth or a half a mile. And so I have found no compelling reason to vote for this, so I'm going to vote against it. Thank you.
Okay, I've got Amanda, Mike Lane, Mike Sigler, and then Deborah.
Thank you. This is a interesting one. I appreciate the conversation, and I appreciate all the constituents and people who wrote in. I know we got a big petition of lots of names. A week and a half ago, I spent a weekend at a master naturalist training at Arnott Forest, and one of the big things we talked about was deer, and deer are a very, very real problem. They decimate forests, they decimate people's gardens, they're everywhere. People hit them with cars. The person who was presenting to us said there's probably an estimated 125 deer per square mile on West Hill, where I live. The average, the normal, should be 6 to 8 deer per square mile. So deer are a very big problem. The other thing we talked about was hunting, and hunters definitely scrape the surface of that, and they can, you know, take whatever, they can take a couple a day for those, that 3-week period, or, you know, there's a couple of periods. But if those 125 deer are reproducing, there's more and more instances of deer having twins and triplets. It just multiplies exponentially. So while hunting is definitely a part of that, it's not having another type of gun that you can take a few more deer is not, I don't believe, a really good argument. The other thing that somebody had written in about was about lead ammunition. And this is something that PEEC has talked about and the Water Resources Council has talked about, and I know it's a big issue. And I really hope that any hunters anywhere are not using lead ammunition. Everything we know about lead poisoning and how lead hurts human beings, I would hope that they are seeking ways, whether you can purchase your lead ammunition in Tompkins County or not, I hope that they're not using it. I guess I'm obviously not going to be voting for this. I don't really feel like it's a big hardship to have to switch your gun for 3 weeks or to have to drive a couple extra miles to a different county or somebody else's property. And I think it for me, it comes back to what Shauna said. It's just, it's not a compelling enough reason to expand our gun laws right now. And I do think this is a fairly small thing. I don't think it's, you know, in the big scheme of gun issues, this is going to make a big impact one way or the other. But I want to be on the side that is not expanding gun laws right now. So thank you.
Mike Lane.
We talked about this a few years ago. I was certainly not in favor of the change at that point. I'm not a hunter. I have family members who are hunters. I have friends who are hunters, clients that are hunters. I have people who I know and respect who teach firearms training. I've heard from a lot of people on both sides on this. And I've made it, like some of the others here, I've made it my business to ask people what we should do. Because not being a hunter and not owning guns, I have to make a decision for the people in my district and for the people of Tompkins County, so I need to understand it better. I respect the arguments that the use of a rifle is not going to be more dangerous. I hear the argument that says responsible hunters, gun owners, are not going to do the wrong thing. They're not going to shoot beyond. They're going to make sure they know what what the target is, et cetera. And, you know, I'm not a bit worried about the responsible hunters. I'm worried about the irresponsible hunters. And there are some out there. And I think if you talk with them, they'll know it. I talked to one person that I thought probably for sure would be a proponent of this change, and he was a Vietnam War veteran, a former hunter who has guns. I saw him one time with a jacket with cross guns on his lapel embroidered, and I asked him. He immediately said, "No, you shouldn't do this because they go too far. The ammunition that you use in a deer or bear hunt is a lot different than the rifle ammunition you use for small game. Much more powerful." So I found myself betwixt and between on this one because I thought the arguments were good on both sides. I think we ought to go ahead and try this. And that's why what I'm going to do is move an amendment. I don't know whether others will like it or not, but for me, this could help me with this resolution. And I'm going to make a motion to amend the resolution, the first resolved, which is asking our representatives to support the change in the conservation law that would authorize this. At the very end of that resolve, I would like to add the following language. Put a comma there and say, with the right of the Tompkins County Legislature to revisit the authorization after a 2-year trial period. So what I'm trying to get at is I think, why don't we try this and see whether we have any problems, whether we have homeowners complaining, for example, that there's too much nearby. It also gives the hunters and others an opportunity to show their responsibility here. So I would move that at this point.
I wonder if that's friendly.
I think that's a reasonable addition, and I would consider it friendly.
All right. Was that Deborah's second?
Yes, it's friendly.
There you go. Okay. So, Mike, you added, with the right of the Tompkins County Legislature to revisit the legislation after...
Revisit the authorization after a 2-year trial period.
Okay.
Because the resolve is asking for the authorization.
Got it. Okay. All right. Thank you, Mike. So that's incorporated. All right, I got Mike Sigler and then Deborah.
Well, I want to thank Mike for that. I think that's actually a really reasonable compromise. I mean, I kind of looked at this the opposite way, whereas, say, rifles were allowed, you know, for big game, would we ban it? Would we, as a body, say we're going to ban rifles from use? I mean, usually it would take something to happen, actually, for us to make a move like that. I mean, I hear what people are saying, that, you know, the distance is a big concern for people. But, you know, I like evidence. I like science. You know, that's a good thing to base decisions on, and as a general rule. And, you know, Anna did the research on it. I mean, it's not like this is happening like in a vacuum. We have a whole state that's used rifles for big game for quite a while. And, frankly, there's just not an issue. So it's kind of like if you were to bring this to me and say, oh, we want to ban rifle use for big game, I'd say, well, why would you want to do that? I mean, there's no issue here. So I guess that's where I'm coming at this from. I mean, I hear some people online that were saying, well, we want to protect the bears. And I'm like, well, I don't think there's going to be a lot of bear hunting in Tompkins County. I don't think I've even heard of a bear in Tompkins County. There probably is, but I haven't seen it. But, yeah, I mean, there is definitely a deer overpopulation problem. It's not that, you know, the deer, we have fewer hunters. We have fewer natural predators for deer than we used to. Deer, there's more food sources for them now because we are living, frankly, in their environment. You know, Ithaca used to have deer just running around. Now people live here. They have a lot more food sources. We have a lot more deer. If it was up to me, I would allow hunters to take more than what they're allowed to right now. That has not happened yet. But if this can help hunters, you know, hunt and take more deer, I just don't have any real issue with it. I mean, again, if it was something about the distance, whereas you could say and point to something, oh, this, see, we have the evidence. But frankly, all the evidence in the state goes the other way. So I'm going to base my decision on all the evidence available. So thanks.
Thank you, Mike. Deborah.
Well, I will be voting in favor of this. I would have voted in favor of this even without Mike's amendment to the resolution, but I think that Mike's amendment makes good sense because people are concerned about public safety. I don't think we need a compelling reason to go along with the rest of the state. I think actually my analysis would go in the other direction. My compelling reason, though, generally is that given my experience with firearms, a rifle is a much more accurate weapon than a shotgun. And I am concerned that the deer, albeit they are a scourge, don't suffer unnecessarily. And then finally, I don't think that this ban on using rifles for the 3 weeks that we hunt deer is a gun control measure. I mean, I don't know what the heck it is, but it's certainly, if it is a gun control measure, it's the dumbest and least efficient one I can imagine. For the rest, for 365 days a year, we can shoot anything else but a deer or a bear with a rifle. So I don't see that adding, you know, the 3 weeks that we hunt deer and bear is going to hurt anything. Most people who hunt have multiple types of weapons. They're not going to be rushing out to buy a rifle they didn't have. I'll be supporting this.
All right. I don't have any other hands up. Ready to vote? Okay. With Mike's amendment incorporated, all in favor of the resolution, please raise your hands. Opposed? Passes 8-6. I want to thank the committee for looking at this so carefully, spending a lot of time on it, paying attention to the constituents who brought the issue to us, and the resolution itself is very well written and documented. I appreciate it, and thank you all for a very thoughtful conversation. So, all right, with that, I think shall we go through the rest of the Public Safety Committee report and resolutions? Go ahead, Rich.
Certainly. Let's see, we have Resolution J, budget adjustment and appropriation of unspent funds from 2018 and prior years to various accounts of the departments that report to the Public Safety Committee. And I would so move.
Seconded by Liz Lynn. Discussion?
I would just say this is the resolution for end of year use of rollover funds.
Rich, would you comment? There were some questions about some of the Sheriff's Department items.
Certainly, there was some question about the Stetsons, and and that is in the union contract, and so that's why these hats are fairly expensive. But I believe the sheriff's intent is to add the level of professionalism associated with the Stetsons to the department. Jason, you said there were perhaps some changes to some of the other things, or is that for next year?
Packet page 38, your description.
Sure. If you go to package page 38, you can see, well, the 36 is the original request. There were several items on there that I did not recommend, and I explained that in section packet page 38. Specifically, there were requests for snowmobile uniforms, bike patrol uniforms. There was snowmobile patrol equipment, patrol bikes, and then a trailer for PR events. I did not support those initially, and after speaking with the sheriff and undersheriff, in between the time that we had spoken and this came forward, there was a supervisor's vehicle that had had some significant mechanical troubles. So we discussed that with them, and they would like to apply that to replacing that vehicle, which I'm recommending. So at the end of the day, say the rollover does not change the amount that's being requested, but some of the items that were originally requested I did not recommend, but did agree to recommend a replacement of a supervisor's vehicle.
Thanks for that explanation. I just thought it was unusual, I guess, that all of the significant amount of rollover was proposed to be used this year without holding anything aside, but that's his choice, I guess. So with those changes, I'm really glad that you reviewed that, Jason.
I mean, the vast majority of it are the two vehicles, which I think are reasonable uses for rollover, and we talk about it. It happens with a lot of departments. The one is a billing issue that was with a uniform group that they're no longer with. The rest of it is somewhat smaller items. And hopefully Stetsons from now on will be issued when we hire folks with their initial equipment issues, so this won't come back to us.
Anything else? All right, Kathy, this is a short form roll call.
Ms. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. Thank you.
And then I have Resolution K, appropriation from contingent fund, replacement pay reimbursement, Sheriff's Office, ID 8843, and I would so move.
Second by Shauna. Discussion? All right, short form roll call.
Ms. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Any no's? That's unanimous. Thank you.
And then I have Resolution L, and I would be moving the version that is in your red folder. The resolution was just passed at the joint meeting of the Budget Committee and Public Safety prior to the legislature meeting. And it's entitled Appropriation from Contingent Fund to Increase Staffing in District Attorney's Office for Increased Discovery Under Criminal Justice Reform, ID 8917, and I would so move.
Second by Anna. Discussion.
Just to give some background for our audience, this is a resolution to anticipate changes in the law that will take place January 1st involving greater work in the police agencies and the district attorney's office to comply with discovery responsibilities for evidence. The idea being that if we can fund these positions now, it would give the district attorney time to try to do the hiring in 2019 and be ready on January 1st rather than trying to do it then.
All right. Anything else? Dan.
I'm just trying to check one thing here. In our budget, these positions were proposed in our budget, and we're just moving it up a little bit. In our budget, there's one full-time position and 1.68 position. Is that still the same numbers here?
That is correct. The 27 hours is for the confidential investigator. That's the equivalent of 0.68.
Thank you.
All right. Another short form roll call.
Ms. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. Thank you.
The Public Safety Committee meeting will be meeting in chambers here on October 17th. That's my report.
All right. Any questions for Rich? All right. Thank you very much, Rich. Let's go back to the list. Housing and Economic Development Committee, Anna Kellis, Chair.
All right. We had quite a dynamic meeting last week. We had a few things that came up, so I'll just give a brief, skip a few things that will hopefully keep it briefer summary. One was a discussion. Jay Franklin came. Did you also get the text? So I just wanted to acknowledge that we have a group of high school students that are here observing us today, and I wanted to thank you all for coming. So also this is for posterity. So as it were. So three things. One was that Jay Franklin came and spoke to us about the capital investment exemption, residential capital investment exemption. It was a robust discussion, and there were a few bits of information that we learned that were quite helpful. One of the things that Jay was saying is that because there is only city. The exemption exists right now only in the city and in Dryden. And there are two issues he felt why it hasn't been used extensively up to now. One is because the advertising has not been there at all for them, so a lot of people don't know about it. But two, actually, the exemption is not necessarily notable if you're only getting an exemption from, say, if you're in the city, just the city. Adding the county actually tips the scale, so it's a notable amount that someone would be getting an exemption from and might make it worth the effort to go through the entire process. Jay noted that he would be being much more thorough and systematic about communication. So that and a bit other things that was discussed that did pass 4-1, and we'll be going to government operations next. We had a dynamic conversation about the Community Housing Development Fund. We passed resolutions about the Community Housing Fund in addition that I will explain very briefly. Essentially, we have this very successful program, the Community Housing Development Fund, that came out of a housing strategy, the original housing strategy, I think it was in 2006. We have about $500,000 from CDBG federal funding that has been recollected from the revolving loan fund that we had to help low-income families buy houses. That fund, as everybody knows, federal, that one has ended. We could any day experience the federal government clawing back that funding, so it seems like the perfect time to invest that into our Community Housing Development Fund. We had discussions about expanding it. Using the CDBG funding at this time seems to be a very prudent idea. The intention is there are developments that come in that are larger developments that are the 9% low-income housing tax credit developments, meaning that they are going to go for state funding for low-income housing tax credits, 9%. They have a range of housing that they support at the lower end of the area median income, an area that isn't served by any other program. We do not want to limit the number of those applications that we send to the state. So setting this somewhat what we could call a revolving side little bucket of funding that could be used to support applications that come to us for 9% low-income housing tax credits, that would allow us to send a wider diversity of low-income housing tax credit 9% projects to go to state for them to pick. And they will probably only pick 1 to 2 a year, but we don't know which ones. So if we send them a wider range, we're more likely to have at least 1 or 2 of them selected. If they are not selected, then that money goes back to this fund. So that is a side fund, and that resolution will also be going to GEO next. We had other robust conversations about the Community Housing Development Fund, and that discussion will continue, actually, at the committee for the Community Housing Development Fund, and that conversation is specifically whether or not we want to expand to using the fund for smaller projects by private developers that aren't necessarily going for low-income housing tax credit. And we need to figure out how we would do the enforcement, who would do the enforcement, how many years they would need to remain affordable, what would be the criteria. There are a lot of things still to figure out. So that is still in the works, under discussion. But I suffice it to say, it is a very successful program and one of the only programs we at the county have to improve or increase the number of affordable housing units in the county.
But just to be clear, the committee passed two resolutions, and those will come to the legislature next meeting.
They will come to the legislature at the next meeting because they do need to go to budget. Sorry, not GO.
Yeah.
They will be going to budget next, and then they will be coming to the full legislature. Lastly, we had a brief discussion on workforce development. I have asked, it turns out we had a strategy at one point. I'd love to get our hands on it. I would really like to see where we were and what our plans were because we are losing our director, and that is going to be probably a central conversation we're going to be having over the next year in housing and economic development. Our next meeting is October 24th, Thursday at 9:30 a.m.
am, and that is my full report.
Thanks, Anna. Any questions? And Jason, you did say Megan McDonald would be coming to the October 15th legislature meeting to do a presentation on the fund?
Yes, Katie and Joan are going to be presenting on the comprehensive plan. Then Katie's going to go to the, then Katie and Megan will talk about the housing development fund. So you'll get two for one tonight.
Okay, thank you.
It'll be available. And it has to go to budget, capital, and personnel, and then it'll come to the ledge on the next meeting. So.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Yep.
Complete Census Count Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
We haven't met since our last legislature meeting, but we will meet on Monday, the 7th of October at 9 o'clock here in Chambers. We'll be talking about our continuing outreach. We'll be hearing reports on some of the locations we're going to be trying to select for our mobile, quote-unquote mobile our mobile computers that will be helping people file electronically in some of the more remote areas. We'll also be hearing from the Public Information Advisory Board on their coming together of a plan for outreach to community groups.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. Any questions? All right. Thanks very much. Downtown Facilities Committee, Glenn Morey, Chair.
Yes. We have not met since our last legislature meeting. Our October 10th meeting has been canceled due to the budget. And our next meeting will be November 14th.
All right. Thanks very much, Glenn. Leslin.
I just want to go back quickly to complete count committee. Just tabling out on Saturday, there were a lot of people who wanted more information, picking up information about the census, about the jobs, etc. So I just want to share that it would be good to have more opportunities like that to really inform people, because they really were interested. I spent probably most of my time there talking about New Green Deal and census. So just wanted to share that.
That's great feedback. Thanks, Leslie.
Yep.
Henry.
I was also there on Saturday morning, and they also someone wanted to know what was the best planning practices for events to host in terms of the census. And so that I told her to talk to Kate Dillon, but again, maybe might want to get some more information out about that process, about, again, best practices for events and other things like that.
Thank you.
Sure.
All right, great. Thank you very much. Health and Human Services Committee, Shauna Black, Chair.
Thank you very much. I have one resolution to move. Resolution N, appropriation from contingent fund supporting a professional security assessment of the Human Services Building.
Second by Deborah. Discussion?
Yeah, so this resolution was actually part of our budget. It was OTR number 76. And during discussion, we decided that since it was a security issue that's currently happening at the Human Services Building, that we might want to move that up. So this will be removed. I don't know if we'll have to do an amendment.
Yeah, I'll have Kevin put it on the amendment list.
Okay.
As you should, because it was part of the recommended budget.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll vote on that to take it off, and then we're going to go ahead and vote for it this evening.
All right. Any questions? All right. Short form roll call.
Ms. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous.
As far as my report, we just had a special meeting before the legislature meeting to vote on the resolution. Our next meeting is going to be this Friday, October 4th at 9 a.m. here in the chambers. Jude Rose, who is the child care planner, will be here to talk to us about her first year in the position. This will also be part of our budget. It's year two of a three-year OTR. So if you have any questions about that OTR, feel free to come this Friday and listen to the work that she's been doing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Shauna. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Dave McKenna, Chair.
Thank you. F&I has not met since the last legislature meeting. We will be meeting on October 17th at 1 p.m., just prior to public safety in these chambers. And I have one resolution to move. That's Resolution O, Budget Adjustment and Appropriation of Unspent Funds from 2018 and prior years to various accounts of the departments that report to the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, ID 8896, and I so move.
Seconded by Glenn. Discussion? All right, short form roll call.
Ms. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Are there any noes? That's unanimous. Thank you. Also,
my report.
All right, thank you very much, Dave. Government Operations Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
Yes, we meet on Thursday, October 3rd. We'll be talking about, and that's at 1:30 p.m. At the old jail. We'll be talking about a number of things, including what Anna just reported on, the potential capital improvement assessment exemption. And I'm not sure exactly. We've talked about it a little bit in our committee over the years, and we'll be coming back and we'll take a look at what's being recommended out of the other committee. We will be talking a little bit about our policy of naming for the county, for example, facilities, rooms, buildings, etc., to review that. And we'll probably touch one of the third rails slightly, which is having to do with legislature training and conferences. And we have had some issues with that since the Government Operations Committee sort of said a pox on all your houses. So we'll talk about it a little. I don't know whether we'll make any progress, but it'll be part of our discussion.
Amanda.
Mike, I've been meaning to ask you, and I'll ask Rick, too. When do we get to talk about the mileage reimbursement again? It's been put off for quite some time.
I don't have the answer to that, and thank goodness that we haven't had to take that third rail again. I have to, don't I?
Somebody, I guess.
We're right behind you.
We'll bring it up again. We have four procedure elements that we are working on: food, gift cards, parking, mileage. That's all part of it. I'm hoping that as soon as we get our director of accounting services installed 3 weeks from yesterday, that we'll be able to make some headway for that and bring it before the GO committee.
Okay, Anna?
Rick, I'm just curious, can you remind us how many staff positions you're currently trying to fill right now? Is it just the one, or is...
We are fully staffed for the first time.
That's lovely. Thank you.
Mike, on the training and conferences, do you have a proposal, or...
No. The chair of the legislature asked if we would take another look at it, so in deference to her request, we're going to be doing that.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Anything else for Mike? All right. Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee. Deborah Dawson, Chair.
We had a meeting last Monday, and we discussed all things plastic. Barb Ekstrom reported on her work with the Chamber of Commerce and the EMC on preparing for a rollout of the plastic bag ban. We will be talking again in future meetings about the 5-cent fee on paper bags. Barb is going to a NYSAR conference in November, and when she comes back, we will discuss the paper bags and other items that she learns more about at that conference. We've heard rumors that the state is going to be considering straws, a straw ban. I personally would like to leave that to the state. And we talked about styrofoam or expanded polystyrene foam, which I guess is not technically styrofoam, but anyway, it's close. We received hundreds of letters urging us to ban it at the county level. We have considered the limited experience of other local jurisdictions, New York City, the Long Island counties, Albany County in banning it, but none of those counties, first of all, it was politically disastrous, I think, that just in terms of the contention that accompanied the issue. New York City had to face protracted litigation about their ban. None of those bans have actually been implemented for any length of time, so we don't have anybody else's experience to go on. Enforcing the ban is problematic because you can only ban things that are packaged in your own county. So you have to make distinctions between stuff that gets shipped in from another county where it's okay to use this foam. What we pretty much decided was that it was really better if this kind of a ban would be imposed at the state level. So what we will be doing is putting together a resolution urging the state to examine this and ban it at that level. And then the other piece of it is we're going to be working on a list of single-use plastic sorts of items that we would like to see not used in county facilities and by county departments. And then Jason will be running that by the department heads and seeing what kind of feedback we get on that, because we can always just pass a resolution saying don't use this, that, and the other thing. And that was the sum total of our meeting.
Thank you, Deborah. Any questions? Thank you. That's a lot of important work, and appreciate that discussion. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Mike Lane, Chair.
Yeah, we met on September 20th, and as you mentioned, we have taken up the direct report evaluations for this year for two of our direct reports, the County Administrator and the Director of Finance. We'll be doing the other two next year. The first thing that's happened is we've asked our Human Resources Department to send out the survey that you mentioned, and please do respond to that. It makes the work of the committee easier. We're going to try to move it along at a quicker pace this year than we did last year, because last year was really a learning experience for all of us, and we were kind of slow at it, frankly. I take a big part of the blame. We've spent a lot of time this year, and we're going to continue to do it, looking at personnel issues. We said last year that we weren't focused enough on personnel issues. And so we've been doing...
Get close to your mic, Michael.
I'm sorry. We've been doing that, trying to focus this year on different kinds of personnel issues. One of the things we asked about was when an employee is hired, what is the orientation, they call it onboarding, for the employee? And we had a nice report on that. And we all had bags given to us, all the legislators, which is what the employees receive. They have little gifts, very inexpensive things, notepads, pens, water bottle, that kind of thing, which I thought was kind of nice to set a tone for new employees. But more importantly, we got this document, which is what the various employees receive, including a little bit dated picture of our county administrator on the first page.
I did not know that was on.
But hopefully everyone has gotten a copy of this now. We did ask for them to go to the full legislature. There's a lot of information in here about our policies and procedures, diversity, how we expect people to treat one another, how we want folks to thrive in their employment with Tompkins County. So I was really appreciative of the fact that we got that from our Human Resources Department.
Did everyone get that printout?
I'm sorry?
Should be on your desk. Get you another one if you want.
I didn't get one.
It's this one that's got... All right.
I don't remember getting either email.
We asked for it to go out. Maybe it hasn't yet. If it should.
We'll follow up.
The other thing I want, if there's any questions on that, I'll be glad to take
them. Yeah, I want to see the picture.
Yeah, me too. I mean, that's of course why.
I did want to mention a couple of things about the Tompkins Corlin Community College. Attended the board meeting the other night, and we got some details from President Montague. I thought you'd like to know that she at the college and the board have hired an interim CFO to take over for Blixey Tetch, who retired. He will be working there while they find a new CFO for the college. His name is William Talbot. He begins work on October 1st, so he's today. And he comes from the Meritas University system, where he had been serving as the acting managing director and vice president of operations. He'll serve until August of next year. I thought you'd all like this one. Thanks to our amazing, this is what Arenthia says, thanks to our amazing faculty and staff and students for registering 102 students to vote during Voter Registration Week. The League of Women Voters, as well as Shauna Black of Tompkins County and legislator Kelly Preston of Cortland County, assisted in making this a successful initiative. And finally, as to enrollment, I want to read this paragraph. Enrollment continues to be monitored. However, it appears our budget projections will be met and likely exceeded. As of September 25th, we are anticipating a total of 3,088 FTEs, full-time equivalents, versus a projection of 3,129, so it's lower than the projection, not including concurrent enrollment numbers, that's the high schools. While we may not meet the FTE goal, the composition of the student body will bring in more revenue than projected. Three factors impact the amount of revenue generated. One, a large increase in part-time students offsets the decrease in full-time students. Per hour, part-time students bring in more dollars than full-time. Second, the state has increased the chargeback rate from $3,460 to $3,500. This increase will bring in more revenue than originally anticipated. Third, concurrent student enrollments are anticipated to increase 18.4 FTE over projections. Due to these factors, it is anticipated we will decrease the need to use college reserves by $70,000. I thought you'd like to hear that.
That's good. That's good. Thank you very much, Mike. Appreciate that report. Deborah?
I have one question. I don't know if it's possible, given how small some of our departments are, but it strikes me that we're almost always reactive in succession planning. And is there some way that your committee might consider being more proactive in planning for replacing people?
Well, I think it's something we talk about regularly in the budget. We have plans that are brought to us by various department heads and our county administrator, of course, and certainly we are supportive of those. I'm not exactly sure what you're saying, unless you're saying, you know, have a financial amount of money to put in for hiring people for a longer period, so succession planning, or
well,
what are you thinking about?
Perhaps my experience is an opposite, because I've worked in agencies that are larger than most of our departments, but usually there would be some depth on the bench, so that when somebody leaves, you're not, you know, frantically trying to figure out how you're going to replace that institutional knowledge. You've got somebody sitting there who has it. And to the extent that we could do that in our departments, I'd really like to see us do more of it, instead of having to always be paying people to stay around part-time and and provide guidance to
I think
the members.
You hit a point. A lot of our positions are unique positions. In other words, we don't have five people doing the same job. So it's very hard. In a larger organization, you may have that, and you can target people for moving up. It's very hard sometimes for us. And also, we continue to worry about diversity and inclusion. And we want to have the opportunity for other people to get into the organization and move up. So those things all are taken into consideration as we talk about these, but I think it's a good point you're making.
Thanks.
I actually think that, I mean, and we have civil service, so there are a lot of constraints that the private sector doesn't have to worry about. But I think there's, and maybe we don't, maybe we get surprised when somebody announces a retirement. But I think staff does look ahead. I think, in fact, the idea that we do have a practice of hiring people, you know, up to, you know, even a year or sometimes more ahead of time to have overlap. I think there's actually a pretty good planning that's done. But maybe we don't always get the news until somebody, you know, kind of announces something publicly, which, frankly, when we hear about it, then it becomes public. Sometimes a lot of this stuff happens before it's ready to be publicly announced. So, but anything else for budget, capital, and personnel? Can I ask Rich? We didn't talk about where. You wanted to have time on the agenda to talk a little bit about the IDA, and we didn't really talk about where on the agenda, but
since there was a question at the last legislative meeting, I just did want to provide a brief update on one of the projects that the IDA is working on, particularly regarding energy. One of the tax abatement issues that the IDA addresses is energy efficiency of new projects. And there were a series of proposals put into place and enforced relatively informally, but with tremendous impact. The City Center project and the Herald Square project are examples of remarkably energy efficient buildings. They're really next generation in what we're finding we're able to do. Also, the Green Star building was originally contemplated for natural gas, and they went back and sharpened their pencils and actually decided to raise their project cost to go to heat pumps. And the development of the old library site and the old Teganic Boulevard project are heat pumps. We're seeing a real transformation in how energy systems are used in buildings, and the IDA has helped with that. In the meantime, the city has is adopting a different building code that will incorporate most of those provisions already. So they're going to be standard for new construction. So the question for the IDA is there something further we should be doing to take this again to the next level? And that's what's under consideration now. We should have a finished report that will be available to the legislators so you can see what's coming next. But I anticipate there will be greater access and support for using heat pumps and other energy efficiency moves in new building and construction around the county. So it's generally good news so far, but there's change coming there. So we'll try to keep you all advised when the definite proposal comes forward, which probably should be in the next month or so.
Thank you, Rich. Any questions? Mike Lane.
Rich, thinking back to when the IDA was about industrial development, lately we've been much more about housing development. And I just wondered, and I'm not looking for any details, but are there more industrial jobs in the pipeline at this point?
Certainly the IDA has supported industrial development. And I'm trying to think of examples. Emmys. Organics, there is a tax abatement for their development out in the town of Dryden now.
Ithaca Beer,
the controversial one. You know,
Transonic?
Not quite as recently, but Therm and, I'm sorry?
Transonic.
Transonic. There's a variety. I do think we're seeing a move in our economic development away from what we consider industrial to more of the high-tech startups. We've supported some dry rooms, which is a fairly new thing out near the airport in the Cornell Industrial Park. Dry rooms are necessary for high-tech development of next-generation batteries, and we helped with that. But they tend to be very far more specific than some of the large industrial projects that we've seen in the past.
Thank you.
To that point, there is a conversation about changing the name of the IDA to include, say, community development or something, industrial and community. I mean, it's something that's in the work plan for next year.
Hope not.
Not removing the word industrial, but...
I hope not.
Okay. Yeah. Anything else about the IDA? All right. Can I get a motion on the minutes of September 19th? Moved by Anna, seconded by Deborah. Any comments or suggestions? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Can I get a motion to adjourn? Moved by Rich, seconded by Henry. All in favor? Any opposed? Thank you all. Have a good evening.